But I begin today in Israel with Dr. Michael Oren, Deputy Minister of Israel. Dr. Oren, always a pleasure. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Always an honor to be with you, Hugh.
Thank you for making time for me today. Would you tell our audience who Marwan Barghouti is?
Marwan Barghouti is a convicted terrorist and mass murderer. Let's start with that.
What did he do? Who did he kill?
More than 10 years ago, during what the Palestinians call the Second Intifada, he ran the arm wing of al-Fatah, Fatah being the ruling wing of the PLO. Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, is also the head of al-Fatah. It had an arm wing known as the Tanzim, and they carried out dozens and dozens of terrorist attacks that killed many Israelis. He was personally convicted, Marwan Barghouti, for 5 murders, interestingly enough. One of the people he murdered was a Christian monk.
Is it a crime in Israel to smuggle out communications from convicted terrorists of any sort, but especially someone who is a big wheel, multiple mass murderer?
Indeed it is, and it was smuggled out, and he'll be punished for that. But it's not just that he got an op-ed out, it's the kind of op-ed he got out, and where it was published, the length it was published, and the way it was published.
I'm going to get that. I wanted to point out to the United States, though, to my audience here, in the United States, Lynn Stewart was a radical lawyer who went to jail for taking out communications from the blind sheikh, another convicted terrorist, and she was sentenced to 28 months in jail for doing just that, taking a terrorist messages out of jail. Because it's a very bad idea to allow terrorists to communicate with their followers, isn't it, Dr. Oren?
It is illegal. It's illegal in the state of Israel as well. There's a big question whether Marwan Barghouti wrote this at all, whether it was written by somebody in the United States and they stuck his name on it. That's possible. But what we do know is, again, where it was published, the way it was published, and the way Marwan Barghouti was presented by the paper, the New York Times.
Now, that's the kicker. It's in the paper of record for the world, the New York Times, the opinion pages earlier this week, why we are on a hunger strike in Israel's prison. Somewhat stunning that the paper of record would publish a terrorist manifesto.
And not that they just published it, they published it on a Jewish holiday when nobody in the state of Israel, nobody in the government could respond to it. Our hands were tied, blessedly tied, but tied. And they gave it space that they gave to nobody else. Listen, I'm a frequent contributor to many papers in the United States, including the New York Times. The average op-ed is between 600 and 700 words. This was 1,200 words. So you're talking about a half a page given to multiple, multiple lies about the state of Israel. Now, when I write an op-ed, I am fact-checked. I am fact-checked here to eternity. They fact-checked the and the ands in my op-ed. Nothing was fact-checked here. Nothing at all. Marwan Barghouti said, for example, that families of prisoners from the West Bank are not allowed to visit their loved ones in jail. It's categorically untrue. Israel works with the Red Cross to ensure that those families get those visits. It was one lie after another. No facts. But the kicker, as you said, was the tagline. And always the paper determines how the author of any article is to be presented. So when I write, they'll say, maybe I was a former ambassador of Israel to the United States. If they're good, they'll mention my recent book, Ally, which is always welcome. They presented Marwan Barghouti not as a convicted terrorist, not as a mass murderer, but as a Palestinian leader and a parliamentarian.
That is an exact quote. Marwan Barghouti is a Palestinian leader and parliamentarian. I'm actually stunned by this. There's so much going on with Korea and with the special election, I missed it. But when I went to look it up, I saw the editor's note appended the next day, which reads, "This article explained the writer's prison sentence, but neglected to provide sufficient context by stating the offenses of which he was convicted. They were 5 counts of murder and membership in a terrorist organization. Mr. Barghouti declined to offer a defense at his trial and refused to recognize the Israeli court's jurisdiction and legitimacy." That is not, to me, Dr. Oren, sufficient context. If the blind sheikh was simply presented as someone who was in the Colorado Supermax for terrorist act and neglected to note he tried to bring down the World Trade Center the first time and killed all the people that he did, that would be sufficient context. I don't even know if it's possible to give sufficient context to a terrorist.
I think what's most missing for me in that correction is regret.
Well, there is none of that. You're right.
Gee, we're sorry. we sort of overlook the fact that this man has the blood of dozens of people on his hands. It's an oops moment.
The five people that he killed, did they react? Has the Israeli newspaper been full of their reaction that the New York Times gave this man a platform? I know he's a significant political figure. I understand that. But there are victims out there and the families of victims who are, I guess they relive their trauma the moment this comes out.
Sure they do. Sure they do. And they were covered extensively in the Israeli press. I don't know if they ever got to the Greek Orthodox monk that he killed. But keep in mind, these are the five murders that they can actually prove that he committed. His organization carried out dozens of attacks that killed hundreds of people. And he was responsible for that. And even the hunger strike he's leading is not about Israel at all. It's about a power struggle within that al-Fatah organization. Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the organization, has edged Barghouti out. And as Mahmoud Abbas approaches the date where he will no longer be president because he's 82 years old and he smokes three packs of cigarettes a day, and they're already fighting in the streets about the succession, Marwan Barghouti wants in. How is he going to get in? By having a hunger strike. And the New York Times basically played dupe for this power struggle within al-Fatah.
Now, let me ask you, Dr. Oren, what is the motivation of the Times here? You must puzzle about this a lot as a Princeton academic, as a award-winning historian. They're doing something here. They're being a participant, not an observer of a story. They're a participant in the story. What message are they sending?
It's delegitimization.
Yeah.
The whole article was delegitimization. Again, you know, by law, I'm not supposed to promote my book, Hugh, the Ally book, now available at famously reduced prices. But I talk about an incident that occurred in May of 2010 with the New York Times when Mahmoud Abbas published an op-ed in the New York Times in which he alleged that he insinuated that the Arabs accepted the UN partition resolution of 1947 and the Jews rejected it. And I called up the editor of the New York Times and I said, wait a minute, this is exactly the opposite. Don't you check facts? We accepted it. The Arabs rejected it and went to war against it. That was the War of Independence. The Arabs rejected the first two-state solution. And he says, well, that's your interpretation.
Yeah. I said,
wait a minute, there are certain, you know, incontrovertible historical facts, uncontestable facts. I mean, did the Allies land or did they not land on Normandy Beach in June 1944? And the editor's response was, well, some people think so.
And so when you contacted...
So it's all relative. The truth is relative.
When you contacted the Times, I mean, this is similar to if Haaretz had published a manifesto from the Unabomber Part 2 without asking Americans what they thought about it. What did they say to you? What was their response to the critique from Israel that they had empowered and actually were an accomplice to a crime in Israel, which is the smuggling out of terrorist communication?
They the bureau here said they had no role about it, that they were caught by surprise by it too. Failure has no fathers. They didn't explain why they published it on a Jewish holiday, for that matter.
Oh my gosh!
My statement said that this would be the equivalent of the New York Times running an article by Dylann Roof.
Yes.
And you would see the reaction of Americans, certainly of African Americans, to that. Imagine how we feel when the New York Times gives this type of legitimacy, this type of space to a lying manifesto by a mass murderer of Jews.
Now, will they be giving you or Prime Minister Netanyahu or anyone else? It doesn't make it good, but at least it would make it more obvious what they have done if they provide you with a similar amount of space to discuss this. Is that happening?
I don't know whether it's happening. Maybe the Prime Minister is responding in his way. He tends to respond via the new media, which sort of does an end run around the New York Times. And I don't think it's even – I think it's beneath our dignity – to get down into the trenches of Marwan Barghouti's lives and try to refute them, because it basically all amounts to a big lie.
I would love the details on his victims to be widely known. That is what is always left behind, is when a killer's victims are not named, they are forgotten, and that is a crime itself. Dr. Oren, Minister Oren, thank you so much for joining me from Israel today. Glad that you could do so, and I appreciate the time.